Reading from the Brihad Bhagavatam Rita, chapter 1, text 24 and 25 of volume 1. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya, om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate
vasudevaya. Ekada citta mudanye ayage munipungava ave pata kita snana imarada samipata upavishta mudavishta vanyamana kita katam Krishnasya dayato sthiti vadhante sma parasparam. Once a group of exalted sages were at Prayag, the best of pilgrimage sites, during the month of Magh. The sages had taken their bath and were happily seated before the deity of Madhava, feeling satisfied as if all their needs in life had been fulfilled. They were praising one another, saying, "You are the recipient of Lord Krishna's mercy." Commentary. These sages of Prayag were humble devotees of Krishna. Each of them disliked hearing himself praised and was thus trying to divert the praise to someone else. Appreciation of one another's good qualities, they could honestly tell one another, "You are the Lord's dearmost devotee." When Vaishnavas are friendly to one another like this, their community prospers. Prayag is called Tirtha Murdhanya, the chief of holy places, because it is located at the confluence of the rivers Ganga and Jamuna. The sages were there at the most auspicious time for bathing, the month of Magh, January, February. As Dattatreya, the incarnation of the personality of Godhead, has explained, quote, "The Supreme Lord Madhava is not as pleased by vows, charity, or austere penances as by one simply taking bath in the month of Magh. Sri Madhava is the presiding deity of Prayag Tirtha." After bathing, the sages were sitting in front of Lord Madhava, feeling extremely fortunate to be together in such a sacred place at such a time. Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnanandana Salakaya Tapsulam Mritamyena Tajmai Sri Gurave Namaha Uchaitanya Manobhishtam Tapitam Yena Bhutale Ayam Rupa Padamayam Sadati Sapadantikam Adadanasyanam Dante Idamyache Kuna Puna Imad Rupa Padamboja Vilisham Janma Janmani Vairagyayun Bhakti Visham Payatnai Apayam Amarabhipshanandam Satambhuriya Paradruta Dhuti Sanatamastam Pramamasriyami Pancha Kalpa Tarubhyasya Vipasindhu Bhayevaja Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vaisvasade Gaur Bhaktavinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, greetings from Govardhan, and we are studying the book that was written at Govardhan, the Natan Goswami just begging for the Lord's mercy that he could share with the world the extreme limit of the last limit of the Lord's transcendence, the extreme the topmost revelation of the Absolute Personality. So, it's very nice to be at this place and remember Sanatana Goswami. I went the other day to his Bhajan Kutir at Manasi Ganga. We always discover new little places. Behind that, there's the maybe Samadhi, not much, it's the Bhajan Kutir of a Vaishnav called Siddha Krishna Das, Tattapad. So somehow we went by there and his deities were there, gaining some inspiration from the sadhus who lived here and performed bhajan, went deep into Krishna consciousness and extracted that essence, that nectar, that pure love and pure pleasure, which is eternally existing, but it's not seen because it's covered by our desire to be the enjoyer and the controller. Abhitam jnana etena, jnanina, that lust, material desire, covers reality. There is something so wonderful, but we can't see it. It's there, but we're not able to relish. Just like in the Upadeshamrita, it's mentioned that sugar is very sweet, but when you have the disease jaundice, can't appreciate it. It's not that the nectar is not there. It's just you're in a diseased condition of life. It's nice to go in Vrindavan and meditate on those devotees who have dedicated themselves to the Supreme Lord in a way that they could actually experience that absolute reality, which is their love for the absolute reality. And their attraction to the absolute reality, that prema bhakti, that love. So Sanatana Goswami was one of those such exalted persons. He was actually the guru of all the other six Goswamis. And Nana Shastra Vichara Naika Nipano Sadharma. And he went through all the scriptures. Vichara Naika Nipano, expertly scrutinizing, to actually bring out the essence and present it. So we went through his heart, we saw his prayers, which was, prayers are very nice. Prayers are, they're an expression of humility and love that increases your humility and love. Dainya, utter humility and prema, they run on parallel lines. And the very nature of emotion is that if it's properly expressed, it increases that emotion. And that love and that humility is needed to become a receptacle for mercy. We're all great Vaishnavas. They're offering prayers. They're offering prayers that express to some degree the sentiments in their heart. Why? Because they want to increase those sentiments. It's so nice that we see this. And then he began to explain a little bit about the book, how it's the essence of the Bhagavatam. The essence, the cream. What is the cream? The cream is the richest thing, the most valuable thing. For the essence, he churned from studying these scriptures and the Bhagavatam. He wanted to present the essence of that. And then, so that's what this Bhagavatam Mita literally means. And then he began to, in his inspiration, in his vision, he began to tell this wonderful story of Maharaj Prithit's son, a great devotee, Janamejaya. And he was with his guru, Jaimini Rishi, who was the great sage who was entrusted with the Samaveda, which of the Vedas is the devotional expression of the Vedas. And Jaimini Rishi was explaining in the Mahabharata, but a richer, more intimate revelation of the history of the world and the history of the personality of Godhead Jamini Jaya was also the personality who was the Mahabharata that we have access to is also spoken. So he heard both. When he heard the second version, he became especially enlightened. And it's like us. We can hear about Krishna in different ways, but according to our anakari, our qualification, the more intimate the subject we hear that we can actually appreciate, the more it will enliven us. Just like we can hear beautiful prayers, Lusha Shukta, etc., worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and we're very enlivened. But maybe if we have that relationship with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and we hear the CC, may even like draw out our bhakti and devotion. He was extremely enthusiastic, and he begged Jaimini Rishi that now, you know, and just as a meal, you ended with the sweet. So it's very auspicious to end something sweet. So please, end this description you gave, the Mahabharata, which explains Krishna, end it with the sweet of the intimate sentiments between God and his devotees, which is the essence of actually the Shastra, because that's where we have to come. So he began to tell a story. And the story was, and it was Maharaj Bricket. He had just finished hearing the Bhagavatam, was fully realized. He had a short time left to live. He was about to focus his mind completely on Krishna without any distraction. Samadhi, the intelligence, samadhi is equal, it's just fixed on one's eternal relationship with Krishna. He's completely free from any fear because he was beyond any duality. He understood that that Krishna is manifesting everywhere. There's no duality. He understood that there's actually no death on the platform of realization. Because we're eternal souls, and that relationship with Krishna is eternal. It does not end when the body ends. He understood he was not the body. He was so fixed, and then his mother came. And although he told his mother, this is not actually the time now, because she was such a devotee and eager to hear, and by hearing the Bhagavatam, he became so enthused for chanting and hearing. When you actually become enlivened in Krishna consciousness, you become enlivened in two ways. You want to taste Krishna consciousness, and you want to distribute Krishna consciousness. You want to hear about Krishna, and you want to chant about Krishna. So even though he's in such a condition, he was so eager, and he began to explain to his mother the essence of the Bhagavatam. And it's such a nice story, because he doesn't have 7 days now. So with his realization, he has to present the Bhagavatam in an appropriate way, but in a shorter time. I think it was Hemingway. He once wrote a letter to someone, Ernest Hemingway, famous author. And he said, "I'm sorry the letter is so long, but I didn't have more time to write it." So when you actually realize, if you don't realize something, it's going to take you longer to say it. That's why I've noticed sometimes, if I give a class and I don't really, when I give a class that I like to do, I'd like to understand the point of the purport very, very clearly. And then explain it. But somehow, if I haven't grasped the essence, I try to explain it again and again and again and again and again. And then when I finish at the end of the class, I'm not satisfied. So I keep on going on, trying to explain it, explain it, explain it. You can actually understand something very deeply. Eloquence in the Chaitanya Charitamrita says, eloquence is truth spoken concisely. So you have realization. You can not only communicate things, but you can even have the option of explaining the same point in a shorter period of time if you don't have that time to elaborate. So he says, I will explain to you the essence of the Bhagavad Gita. And then he begins to explain this story, which we're going to discuss today. And that story is about Narada Muni searching for that devotee who is the topmost recipient of Krishna's mercy. And it's a very interesting. Mercy is what? Mercy is the love that someone in a superior position gives to you. And if you have a loving relationship with that person in a superior position, that mercy or love he gives to you is himself. The topmost recipient of Krishna's mercy is that devotee whose love and the intimacy and the purity of his love is so powerful that Krishna, God, the Absolute Reality, gives himself most fully. And that's the Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam is simply a progression of higher and higher revelations of the Absolute Reality until you get to the 10th canto, which is what? Swayam Bhagavan. What does Swayam Bhagavan mean? What does Swayam Bhagavan mean? The original. But what is the original person? Because you can't have an original in the Absolute Reality in one sense. In other words, it's not that there was a manifestation of Krishna before there was Narayan. So what does the original mean? Swayam means what? Himself. It's God when he's himself. When someone is with himself, it means when he's with people who are confidants, intimate, and you can reveal himself. So Krishna means God when God's himself. We say original, because that's the fullest manifestation of the Absolute Reality. And I explained many times that this is the whole essence of the Gaudiya Vaishnava Siddhanta or conclusion. It's to get people to the point where they can have an intimate relationship with the Absolute Reality and have an appreciation when God is himself. We have a beautiful picture in this room. There's so many pictures in my room, but it's a beautiful. Krishna is sitting under a tree in the forest of Vrindavan. It looks like it's the bank of the Jamuna. There's beautiful pink lotuses. His feet is in the water. Radharani is with her beautiful blue sari, and she's to Krishna's left side, and her head is leaning on Krishna's shoulders, and Krishna's head is leaning on Radharani, the top of her head, and her arm, very intimate. Her arm is affectionately placed on Krishna's left arm. So intimate. God is relaxed. He's relaxed. He's revealing all. He's revealing his heart to his topmost devotee. And that's the essence of Krishna consciousness. So this story will follow Narada Muni looking for that topmost devotee and seeing various degrees of pure devotees. Just like in any relationship, a friend can have a pure relationship with another friend. Completely pure. But there's something not more pure in one sense, but perhaps higher. The parents. The mother. The son. And then the conjugal relationship. So, it's not that the mother wants to be the lover because it's higher. No, hers is perfect and pure. It's just a different relationship. The one relationship has more aspects of intimacy and exchange. So there can be a progression. And I love these books like Ramananda Samvad, the discussion between Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the discussion between Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Ramananda Roy, where they discuss the levels of purity in bhakti. No other theological presentation of the intimacy of relationship with God. So this is such a wonderful story. It starts with these sages, they're at Prayag, the best of the holy places. It's the confluence of the Jamuna, the Ganga, and the Saraswati. And it's in the month of Magh. It's a very, very special month. There's three or four special months in spiritual life that are prominent. Kartik, the month of Radharani, which is, I think it's vows of you know, basically increasing chanting. There's Purushottama Mas. The perhaps that's austerities or something, and maybe Shravan festivals. But then there's Magh, and Magh specifically means bathing. If you bathe in that month, the verse here says, Krishna is not as pleased as that, as by vows, as by charity, bathing in the month of Magh. It's very special. More than, I think, 15, 16 years ago, I went to the Kumbh Mela, the largest religious festival in the world. And I remember waking up in the middle, there's one vow in the month of Magh that you bathe before sunrise. It's freezing. It's North India in the winter. I was just at Mahanidhi's ashram in Radhakund the other day. I took some of you know Mike, Krishna Mike, and his wife, actually. He's got married. And I took them to Radhakund. So we stopped to see Mahanidhi Swami. And he made Krishna Mike a devotee. Krishna Mike wanted to offer his respects to him. He's actually in his ashram in Baltimore. So Mahanidhi was, we were describing different things, and Mahanidhi was telling me that he took that vow, you know, to bathe in Magh before sunrise. He's bathing in Radhakund before sun. So here it is. I remember when I bathed, it was an unbelievable experience. I remember I would have a wool blanket, I would go to the confluence and take off the blanket and just dive in that water in the middle of the winter. But it's surcharged. You felt so enlivened. So it's a good, these are exalted sages. And the nature of, by the nature of your consciousness, you can extract more from a spiritual phenomenon. These are exalted sages. The best of pilgrims, the time of the monk, they've taken their bath, and then they're happily seated before the deity in this purified consciousness. So they're before the deity that they love, and there's so much reciprocation. The deity is revealing himself to them because of the purity of their consciousness and their desire. Everything is sambandha or relationship. And relationship means what you give, you get. It's reciprocal. So when you're in exalted consciousness and you have personal relationship with the holy name, with the deity, with the Dham, when you're bathing in a holy river, when you read the Bhagavatam, Vayam Natu Vipityama Uttama Shloka Vartate Vitrinivatam Rasajnanam Swade Swade Pade. The sages of Namasharani, what was their reciprocation with Krishna Katha? I am the two of the chitta. We never become tired. The Shrindatam, Rasajnana, and we're hearing this knowledge of sambandha, of relationship between Krishna and his devotees. Swadhu, swadhu, the day to day. We're relishing at every step. So actually, Narada Muni is incognito in this group of sages. He's watching this. And he's appreciating and feeling satisfied as if all their goals of life have been fulfilled. The same thing with Marge Prickett when he heard the Bhagavatam. Everything is fulfilled. Your heart is filled with unlimited love. What more can you want? You have no fear. Don't we all want that? So this is the condition. Feeling satisfied. All goals of life have been fulfilled. And they're praising one another. You are the recipient of Krishna's mercy. And it's so nice, Vaishnava community exchanging love based on the experience of Krishna's mercy. That's a Vaishnava society. You feel commonality with everyone. Why? Because you're sharing the same experience. And what is that experience? You're sharing the experience of Krishna's mercy. How wonderful. And it makes you very, very humble. When you get mercy, you feel love. And love is a very humble position. You just want to serve and submit to the object of your love. The Vaishnavas are very humble. When they're experiencing that love, they're feeling very insignificant. And they like it. They like it because they're overwhelmed with pleasure and love. And therefore, when someone comes and says, "You are great, you are great," they don't like it. They don't want to compromise that experience of love by the ego. I am great. I am this. I am this. They protect it. They do not allow praise. They don't want to hear it. Nay, bhakta, nahi hum. I am not a bhakta. Ah, bhakta hai. You are a bhakta. Vaishnava moon. But they like to praise others. Why? Because praising is good for the soul. Because the soul is for others. And to be praised, that's good for the false ego. So what does the Vaishnava want? Does he want the false identity? I am the controller, I am the enjoyer. Or does he want the real identity? I am the servant. The Vaishnava is satisfied. He's completely satisfied in heart. Gopi Pranadanta, when the purport says, when Vaishnavas are friendly to one another, like this, the community prospers. It's science. When Krishna is pleased, there's prosperity. That's science. Someone was that, my friend, Nagakishore Shastri, he was explaining that he was a great, with a great, scholar, I forget, a Vaishnava or something. That Vaishnava said, they stopped two things in India. Everyone would be prosperous. He said, cow slaughter and abortion. He said, where is the people's faith? He said, if you read 5,000 years, you read in the Shastra, how many people in India? They were all prosperous. Same point, same thing as Prabhupada's faith. Prosperity, it's how Krishna is reciprocating. And if one is in an exploitive mentality, then Krishna, by his mercy, doesn't give you more to exploit. It's a fact. Dharma leads to auspiciousness. So look at this. You are the recipient of Krishna's mercy. You know, I'm going to say one thing here. Let me just, because I wanted to change the format here. The format I wanted to change because I thought going over all of those verses in this format, this phone format, may have been a little tedious for the audience. Maybe lost some of the audience. I wanted to change the format to trying to cover in one or two classes a whole story of one of those devotees. So I may or may not read the all the Sanskrit.
Oh.
I'll do it. Let's see. I mean, I'm fine. Nipath-tadanyam tatraiva vipravaya samadhita dasha-shvame dike tirte bhagavad-bhakti tatpara. Dear Mother, so we get Maharaj Prakrit's compassion in these verses. Compassion. He is dying, and his compassion is for others. Maharaj Prakrit is sitting on his deathbed. Maharaj Prakrit is sitting on his deathbed. he hears about the hellish planets, and then out of compassion, he asks Sukadeva Goswami, how can we deliver these people? And the story of Ajamil and the holy name is presented. This is the nature of Vaishnava, Paradukaduki, he has no suffering, he's suffering from it. And I was there in Prabhupada's room in Vrindavan. He couldn't eat anything except a half a glass of pomegranate juice, practically, a day. He was in such a painful condition. And it was in the last 1 or 2 weeks of his manifested appearance. I was in the room when he started to ask Tamal Krishnamaj what the devotees are eating. And we had a Yogyapati, now Bibi Govinda Swami, cooking, and it was like nectar, and you know, but see the nature of Vaishnava. When we become sick or ill, what happens? We love it, in one sense. Why? We become self-absorbed. People surround us. Oh, please, take this. Let me give you this hot tea. But we become self-absorbed. Large cricket for others. My dear mother, at that time, a first-class Brahmin arrived at the holy site called Dashvamedha Tirtha. He was fully absorbed in devotional service to the Lord. Bhagavad Bhakti Uttara. He was fixed. So Narada Muni is kind of watching this. You know, so another person comes, and he's a Grihastha Brahmin. He's in the world, he has family, he has possessions. So this is the first pure devotee that we're looking at. Richly endowed with all assets, he was the spiritual leader. Devato Sesha Sampa Divi. Anyway, the lights went off. So it's hot. Let's see the page. Richly endowed with all assets, he was the spiritual leader of that region. His retinue surrounded him as he prepared to distribute food to the local Brahmins. So he was a prosperous person. He was surrounded, vipa, parjanized by subordinates. He had a position of authority. Adhikarvan, and he was the possessor of, he had spiritual authority. And what was he doing? Bhojana artham. He was making preparation to feed the people. Obviously, this was a prosperous person. So they're all watching. I can't read the Sanskrit because the light is not bright enough, so I would like to do it for you. The Chitra Krishna Vastuni Anishpadya Mahamana Avasya Kam Samapadya Anishpadya Mahamana. Having collected all sorts of valuable items. So again, he's not a poor man. The worship of the Lord. The generous Brahmin, Mahamana, very broad-minded, then sought for the preliminaries, first by purifying a large area on the ground. So he knew the rituals. He was pukka, first class, in that way, surrounded. So, then he swiftly built a handsome altar, which he smeared with mud with his own hand, and covered it with a canopy. So we're getting what this is going to present is the nature of a Vaishnava. So somehow or other, by his karma, by his purity, maybe even by his devotion, he had tremendous assets. But they're watching that he was surrendered. Everything he had is used only for Krishna's pleasure. And he's setting up this altar. He's smearing the ground. He's carefully putting up a canopy. And this is the nature. He's carefully thinking of Krishna, and he loves Krishna, how to give Krishna first-class things. There's the story of Raghava Pandit, one of the great devotees of Lord Chaitanya. that he was a grihastha and he would worship his deity in such a way that even though outside his house he had coconut trees, I think it was 2 miles away, 10 miles away, 20 miles away, he heard that there were some special coconuts. And he would walk all that distance to get what is finest for his deity. And that's love. When you love someone, you offer what's best. And you offer what you think is best. And sometimes there's a correlation, a little correlation, with what you like and what you offer to Krishna, in the sense that what you like sometimes you think is best. I'll give you one example. I told you, there was one learned scholar, he had 9 PhDs, he lived in Vrindavan. He started to get some Western disciples, and where do they come from? They come from ISKCON. And what does ISKCON mean? Pizza. Everyone eats pizza. And they go to the MVP and the restaurants, and now they want to establish that they're coming to the authentic Krishna consciousness. So they ask this scholar, right? Can we offer Krishna pizza? Right? And he gave, he said, something, I forgot, he said, you offer Krishna whatever you think is best. What you like, you think is best. Whatever you think is best, you can offer with the most love. So an Italian can offer the pizza with the most love to Krishna. A South Indian can offer Italy's indulgence with the most love to Krishna. Punjabi can offer bhaturi, roti, and chana to Krishna with the most love. A Gujarati can offer dokla to Krishna with the most love. There's something in that. It's not in that. Of course, when you really love Krishna, you try to find out what he likes best. But what he loves best is love, and according to your condition. And that also has to do with our individual talents. What we do best, what we like, and generally the things we do the best. And generally those are the things that we can offer the nicest to Krishna. Right? Someone is a scholar, he tries to offer Svadhyaya his study, and of course there has to be in our devotional processes a surrender. We do whatever Krishna wants. That's also there. But there's a certain element in the psychology too. Artists can make nice pictures, he offers it to Krishna. Even in the spiritual world, Chitta Devi paints pictures, Tunga Vidya does music, or something like that. But now, he placed Krishna's form as a Shalabham Shila on the auspicious golden throne and worshiped the Lord with great devotion. Joyfully perform the prescribed rituals. So this is devotion. But real devotion is not done for a result for oneself. There is real devotion you don't perform because this is auspicious for me. Real devotion is done with love for Krishna, the highest devotion. And therefore, you're absorbed in it. And you're not thinking, I describe this, when you're chanting, you're not thinking of the last bead that you pulled out. You're thinking of sacrificing your breath and glorifying Krishna and pleasing him, and you become absorbed. So Narada is looking at this devotee. He's there and he's watching him. He's giving such beautiful things, but it's joyfully performed. I described before, other processes are not sukham. They're not pleasurable, other processes. Why? He said, every other activity except love, the pleasure is in the future. If you perform jnana marga, which means austerities, the goal is moksha. The pleasure is moksha. The fruit is moksha. It's not what you're doing at the moment. That's not what you want. No one performs austerities because what they want is austerities. They want to suffer on the bodily platform. No, they want to be liberated from the body. It's for the future. And if you're performing karma and all the rituals and swaha, swaha, you want the fruit. By this ritual, something will come to me. But when you do bhakti or love, if you're doing it for some goal, it's no longer love. Love is a hoitiki, it's causeless. And therefore the pleasure of the activity is now. Completely absorbed now. And that's what they're seeing in this Brahmin. Joyfully perform now. In front of Lord Hari, he placed food, clothes, and other offerings. He made a one-man festival by dancing, singing, playing music, and so on. Everything. Feeding nicely, love, offering gifts, valuable perfume, incense. This is puja. This is worship. Greets him as an honorable guest with water, padyam washing his feet, akshman, scented water for drinking, other items. And he's doing it by the standard etiquette because Krishna in the Shastra says how he wants to be pleased. Not if you develop love and spontaneous devotion that you no longer go by the Shastra. But no, how should Krishna be pleased? This is the way Krishna likes to do things. Krishna has said in Shastra. He's finding, oh, how will Krishna be pleased? And also from his heart, Gita, Bhajya, with singing, Nityam, dancing, Vahutsavam, great festival for Krishna. All for his pleasure. And he offers artik, and it's very personal in that worship, the artik, the lamp. I heard two things. One, the guest is coming, and you're showing him the entrance. Artik means, what does artik mean? What does it mean? Well, no, but it has something to do with rati tonight, doesn't it? Yeah, no. So you're presenting to light up in the night, something. Something like that. But I heard also from my friend, when you have spontaneous worship to the deity, then you follow what the devotees, the perfect devotees, how they worship Krishna. And how do the perfect devotees, how do they worship Krishna? Well, when Krishna leaves the house, what does Mother Yasoda do? She waves an artik lamp. Why? Wave away the evil spirits and create auspiciousness. One of my friends is a Sanskrit pandit. Whenever he goes home to his mother, before he leaves when he comes or when he leaves, the mother takes out an artik tray. But it's not just like seven circles, you know, five circles, three circles, two circles. It's not like that. It's like she's thinking, oh, my son, I'll protect him. So he's doing it with this. And it's spontaneous, too, that he loves so much. He then offered homage to the Brahmins present, who were expert in arguing from the Vedas, Puranas, and other texts. He offered respects to the Sannyasi's household and he offers respect to all the devotees. Now, it seems that in my presentation now, that I'm gonna try to see if I can cover each devotee in two classes. If I get too, you know, I just thought about quick, what's the sense? But I'll before we go to the purports, but Narada Muni's just watching this, and it blows his mind. The devotion that this person has. And by watching him, it's going to be very relevant because most of you are grihasthas. You can see what a perfect grihastha Vaishnava is like through this Brahman. But the thing that really startles him, at the end of all the worship, and he fed everyone, even the dog eaters, the chandalas, the poor people, he's just fed everyone. After all this is finished, he says a prayer that whatever result comes from this auspicious ceremony, I offer it to you, my Lord. He has no food of desire. There's nothing he wants out of this. Rayana Prasarve Nakupas Chanya Bibyati Swaga Pavarga Nayakeshu Apitil Yatta Darshana. One who is Narayana Parayana, he has love for the Lord. Narayana Prasarve Nakupas Chanya Bibyati Swaga Pavarga Narake Apitil Yatta Darshana. One who is Narayana, he loves from his heart. Apitil Yatta Darshana. Swaga Pavarga Nayakeshu. He doesn't care if he's in heavenly planets, the earth planet, the hellish planet. Everything is for Krishna's pleasure. Everything is for Krishna's pleasure. And therefore, because that's the nature of the soul, his love, he's completely satisfied in heart. And at the end of this, we'll go over the verses a little bit next time, Narada just jumps up. He comes out of incognito and starts saying, you're the topmost devotee, you're the topmost devotee. And person's bewildered because you don't feel that way. Because when you become realized, you're overwhelmed by the absolute reality and your relationship to it is an infinitesimal spark of that absolute reality. And if you have some prominence, and what's your prominence? Your prominence is among the other criminals in this world. That's all. We don't think I'm so proud. But what are we doing in this world? Why are we in this world? We don't think that way. If we give a good class or we do something prominent or we go, oh, I'm very big. I'm very big. But no, they're always looking at Krishna. With love. And they understand his glory. They feel very insignificant. Someone says, oh, you're the best devotee. And he'll say, I'm not the best. He's the best. And then he'll point, it'll happen to a devotee who has a higher status. Because he's a grihastha brahmin. He's giving everything to the Lord of his family. But there's a king who gives his whole kingdom. So then we'll go to the king. And that way we'll follow. And if you have the patience to go through this with me, you'll understand the essence of Krishna's mercy, which is bhakti. Because you'll see that bhakti manifest in every different thing. I'm actually feeling, now it took a while to get to the story, I feel this is more me now. It's a better format now to have this with the story, so I'm kind of looking forward to it. So we will end for now. I also said that I would like to intersperse questions, but I got so much in the story that I didn't. But if anybody has a question, they can ask now.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Who's that?
This is Gail.
Oh, Gail. Okay. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. I have a humility question. When you describe the humility of a devotee, when you describe the humility of a devotee as
describe the humility of a devotee.
Yes, I can understand you when you say that the devotee likes the humble position because when you experience Krishna's mercy, you feel affection. you know, and so you want to be in a humble position so that you can experience mercy and therefore experience affection. But if you would explain how, along those lines, how that same devotee always wants to push someone else as superior to himself. You know, can you connect those two things to explain that more?
Let me repeat the question. So you're saying you can understand how when a devotee receives mercy, he becomes very, very, very humble. But your question is, can I connect that type of humility when you're feeling mercy, by the devotee's glorification of other devotees, or is that it? Or wanting to speak?
For me, that's not such a, I can't assimilate that in the same way.
Why he glorifies another devotee. Well, you know, it's because when you're actually feeling humility and you're feeling service and the love is coming from your heart, you're developing such an appreciation for Krishna.
Yes.
And you develop an appreciation not only for Krishna, but things in relationship to Krishna. So the thing I think you have to understand, Gail, is that it's not an analytical standpoint, right? It's how he feels. So he's feeling himself that humility and that mercy, and it's bringing love out of his heart, and he's really appreciating that humble position. And it naturally creates a mood of glorifying Krishna, and things in relationship to Krishna also become great. Now, why doesn't he say, well, I'm also part of Krishna, I'm also great? Because it's not the mood of his heart. The mood of his heart is service and humility, and he's satisfied, and he's overwhelmed with love. So, see, he doesn't go there. Krishna's great. Things in relationship to Krishna is great. But then he doesn't go, well, wait, if that's your devotee and he's great because he's in relationship to Krishna, then I also should be great. It's not the feeling of the heart.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not feeling that way. He's not feeling great. He's feeling like, I'm just so insignificant. You see, there's two senses of worth, right? One sense of worth is, I'm so insignificant, of value, of having value. One sense of having value in relationship to Krishna is, we're so insignificant. Another sense of value is, wow, it's part of Krishna, that's great. So in relationship to yourself, you're thinking, I'm just an insignificant part of Krishna. In relationship to others, you're thinking, wow, he's part of Krishna. That's really great.
Mm-hmm.
It's a psychology, Gail.
Mm-hmm.
And bhakti is very much how you feel.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you, Gail. Anybody else like to ask a question? Okay. Anyway, today is Ekadasi here. It'll be there, I don't know, probably tomorrow to you. So I want to get on with the chanting and Madhavatiti Bhakti Janani, the days of Lord Hari, they give birth to devotion. Would anybody like to say Hare Krishna? It gives me a sense of the audience.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, this is Bharati.
Hare Krishna, Bharati. Hare Krishna. Thank you for joining our Sangha. Nice to hear from you. Anybody else like to say Hare Krishna?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, this is Dr. Carl.
Carl, I was just thinking of you so much. I was missing you. Thank you, Carl.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining the Sangha. Thank you so much.
Hare Krishna.
I will. Anybody else like to say Hare Krishna?
Hare Krishna, this is Anastasia.
Anastasia, okay. Okay, very nice. Okay,
thank you.
Keep online, Anastasia, and you could speak to your brother. He's sitting here, relishing the class. You know, he so much likes bhakti and philosophy, so if I can tell you, when he hears good points, he writes them in his red book, and he gets great pleasure. Okay. Anybody else like to say Hare Krishna? Okay, then we will...
Hare Krishna Maharaj, this is Kuldeep.
Kuldeep, Hare Bol. I got your letter. I'll get back to you. Thank you so much for joining
the Sangha.
I'm really... I'm already making plans for the Panihati. I'm having this whole presentation of Gaur Leela. I'll tell you about it later. Okay. I'll write you soon about that. I couldn't get the letter. Thank you. Anybody else like to say Hare Krishna? Okay, then we'll end now, but Anastasia, you stay on the line, okay? Om Shikalpa Tirubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Deva Cha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah.